It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast. Featuring
Fillmore's finest, Monte Hill. The pride of the Excelsior, Joe Butcher Boy Shasky. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
All right, oh baby, lines are lighting up, 888-957-9570. Good morning, everybody out there getting off their graveyard shift. Not sure how the overnight dancers are doing. Business may be down, but the Warriors will be in town on Sunday, so business pick back up. Janitors, truck drivers. Think about Ron and Hayward, the big truck driver who's a Laker fan, Dodger fan. You know it's a matter of time before he calls in and stunt on us. You know he's going to flex at some point. 888-957-9570 is the number as we talk about the 49ers. A massive game against the Cowboys to get the 4-4. Operation 4-4 before the bye week. And you can just calm the waters for a week. You come out of the bye week. You're playing Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is probably going to be, they're going to be without Chris Godwin. Probably going to be without Mike Evans. We'll see if they make a trade. Maybe they're in on Cooper Kupp. We'll see about Tampa Bay or whatnot. But you're going to play a wounded Tampa Bay team that I don't feel great. Like, they're not a great team. So you could go out here and go on a run here. The season's not over just because you lost to Kansas City. It was a 14-12 game late in the third quarter, and Purdy throws the interception. Of course, it was an egregious interception as we have visitors here. Hello. What's the logo? Is that Nirvana with the lips and the tongue coming out? Is that Nirvana?
No, it's Rolling Stones.
Oh, Rolling Stones, sorry.
Are you kidding me? Lips and the tongue, Nirvana?
Yeah. I was kidding.
It's like two decades prior.
Oh, yeah, it's 2 decades before my time. That's it is a Warriors Wednesday. Brought to you by Freeman's Appliance. Come see their full selection of in-stock luxury appliances and live working vignettes. Spadoni knows about it. He was just there in Pleasant Hill. Visit Freeman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill today. I love it, too. But I can't afford half that stuff. So we're talking about Shanahan talking to Purdy in the locker room right after the game. Here's what Shanahan had to say, because somebody did ask him about that, because I didn't realize it was such a big deal. Honestly, Shasky, I just thought, oh, whatever. They talked after the game.
It sounds like, I mean, I don't cover the team, but it sounds like from the people who cover the team, they said that they've never seen him do this. This is why it's a little different. And I think that's why it was tweeted out by multiple reporters.
All right, here we go. Shanahan on the Brock conversation.
We're talking like we always do. I just didn't realize all you guys were standing behind me, spying on us. I love talking to guys after the game. I just happened to be walking back, and you were standing right there. So we stopped and started talking. It really caught me off. I forgot everyone was still in there. We were just hanging out, talking about the game and things like that. And then when I looked behind, you guys kind of scared me. I didn't realize everyone was creeping so bad. But that's just what we all do. We talk.
Yeah, so maybe he does it before the media comes into the locker room. Maybe he does it when the media leaves the locker room. I have no idea. But I honestly, this situation, I don't think it's a big deal at all. I like the fact that the coach talked to the quarterback and the quarterback listened to the coach and they shook hands and nodded their heads and kind of talked about it. It's like, hey, we're going to wash this away. Oh. It was a bad game for everybody. And who knows what that conversation entailed? Who knows what was discussed during that conversation? But the fact that it was, maybe I'm oblivious and I was living under a rock for the last 3 days. But I didn't find the situation to be that big of a deal at all. That's just me, though.
Well, look, again, I'm just following with the beat writers. Like, if the beat writers are all going to tweet it out and they were surprised, then it's like, oh, okay, well, now I'm – because to your point, like, do I know what goes on in the locker room? I have zero feel for this. So, and here's the other thing. Like, on the list of issues coming out of Sunday's game, this is, like, 75th on my list.
Yeah, no
now,
doubt.
But this does, like, you know what the bigger problem is? Like, Purdy, stop trying to throw into double coverage in red zone as you're getting smashed because Colton McKivitz is getting blown up on the O-line. You know what I mean? Like, that's a bigger issue than how the coach and the quarterback talk. Right. But I do think that these are one of those things, like, we might look back on this, like, wow, that was a turning point when Steve Young screamed at George Seifert on the sideline. Right. That was a turning point for the 94 Niners. Or, like, this could be a moment we look back on, like, wow, they haven't been on the same page for a couple of weeks. Like, I kind of want to see what happens from here. Well, I'm going to reserve my judgment, and I'm going to say that Shanahan's track record speaks for itself, and Purdy's track record speaks for itself. But I'm not going to lie, that loss has me questioning a lot of things.
Again, when we put it all in perspective, Chiefs are undefeated. They have the best defense in the league. They're a great team. And despite not having Deebo Samuel, and you lose Brandon Ayuk late in the second quarter, I kind of sit back and watch the game over and say, boy, as poorly as the Niners played on Sunday, It was a 14-12 game, and there's a miscommunication between Ronnie Bell and Brock Purdy. They were going to take the lead late third quarter in that football game. I know it sounds crazy. And hell, you get to Jacob Cowing playing. I thought Brock Purdy underthrew it. It was a great play designed by Shanahan to get Cowing. And I think now, moving forward, you got Cowing, and you're working in Ricky Pearsall. You can start to use these guys' speed and their wiggle. You can start to create some things for them alongside George Kittle. Now, all of a sudden, you get the first out, as you mentioned, McKivitz gets blown up, you throw the double coverage, that's ball game. But with all that happened on Sunday, losing your wide receiver, don't forget, you didn't have Juwan Jennings. You didn't have Third and Juwan in that football game, and yet you were battling. So, despite the loss, and I know I'm sounding like a Capri Sun, a fruit snack type of guy right now, they did battle the Chiefs. They did fight. This defense showed me something on Sunday.
It's the way the game ended for me in terms of nine straight runs and going right down the middle. It did feel like their will got broken late in that game. To your point, I thought the defense, of all the things coming out of that game, I actually felt okay about Nick Sorensen. I thought they did a good job in that game. I know we want to crush him at every turn. In the same way, we've been praising Brock Purdy, and now he had a stinker, and we got to kind of call it out. Like, I thought Nick Sorensen did a good job. I thought Bosa played really hard in this game.
Yeah.
Was it enough? No, clearly. I thought Malik Mustafa, who we haven't even brought up, Malik Mustafa was hitting in this game. He didn't get trucked at the goal line, but I thought he showed a lot of promise. Yeah. You brought up Cowan, and I just want to make one point before. My bigger issue with Shanahan, some of these personnel things drive me a little crazy. McCole Hardman, can only do one thing, run really, really, really fast with the ball in his hand. He doesn't even know what routes he's running. And so they do jet sweeps, and they get him the ball right away in his hand, and he gets upfield, and he makes dynamic plays. And then they do the fake jet sweep where he pivots and comes back out, and then they throw the ball to him in the flat. Think of the Super Bowl final. Jacob Cowing couldn't give you a little of that for 2 months? You couldn't find a spot for Jacob Cowing to make a play here or there? Like, God, it's frustrating.
Well, I think we don't know what goes on in practice. I don't know what goes on in practice. I don't know where he's at in his progressions. Now, he looks like he's ready to explode now and get on the football field and make some plays. So, let's see him moving forward. Can he be a consistent wide receiver? Because Lord knows they need him.
I don't think he needs to be consistent. Can't you just find a way to utilize an individual player's skills?
But the game flow is always different, right? Maybe you do have a plan to use this player, and things change within the game. Things change.
If I gave Andy Reid, for example, if I gave Andy Reid Jacob Cowing, he wouldn't find a way to utilize that speed multiple times.
Maybe he would. He's Andy Reid. But Shanahan's not Andy Reid. Shanahan's a different guy.
I think that's where he's got to kind of step it up a little.
This is where I'm going to sit back like the All-22 guys. The ball should have gone here. The ball should have gone there. I have no idea where the ball should have gone. I don't know who was the primary wide receiver. I don't know who was the two receiver, the three receiver, and four. I have no idea what that was. What was going on here?
Hold on, Shasky.
What I do know is this, is that maybe they did have something implemented for Jacob Cowing, and they had to get away from it depending on the game flow, depending where they're at in the game, depending on the doubted situation. There's a lot of variables that go into this stuff, Shasky.
I don't dismiss that, but I think the great coaches find a way to utilize their entire dressed up 47 as best they can. And when I see Connolly and Ronnie Bell getting the amount of snaps that they're getting and the fact that this team needs some pop and some explosion plays, you have to find a way to utilize your roster. And I look at McCole Hardman, and he's a better player right now than Cowan. There's no dismissal.
He's been in that system for a long time,
too. But the way Andy Reid utilizes him clearly is like, he makes an imprint. He knows how to use the one thing that he does really well. I think that's something Kyle should take away from this game.
Well, McCole Hardman, let's not forget, he was a disappointment. He was a disappointment for Kansas City to the point where he moved on to the New York Jets. They had no problem letting him move on, but he knows the system. He's been in the system for a while. And, Andy Reid's going to have to use him. And he had to use him because Juju Smith-Schuster, his hamstring flared up in the middle of the first quarter. He wasn't even going to play midway through the week. Then he gave it a go, and his hamstring gave out on him. So you had no choice but to play McCole Hardman. I want to read this from a coach because I do find it interesting. I do think we're spending maybe a little too much time on this. But Armando, who coaches Team Kid, shout out to Team Kid, and he does a great job with girls basketball all over the Bay Area. I love Mondo. It's my guy. And he's a coach. And he goes, honestly, As a coach, I feel it's not a big deal to talk in front of others. If I keep a player after everyone leaves, I think that's more embarrassing for the player. So everybody coaches differently. Everybody has different tactics. This situation here, and I see guys get talked to. I played sports. Guys talk to in the locker room. Coaches talk to them. Honestly, I had no idea this was a big deal that Shanahan talked to Purdy after the game. I was like, oh, cool. They're talking after the game. Let's flush the tape. Let's go to BPA. BPA, what's happening?
Morning, guys. How you doing?
I've had better Wednesdays.
It's just a great Wednesday. Warriors play, Niners play, the Cowboys. Man, every day I wake up and I get to talk sports for a living. The sun is out, man. I feel great today.
I don't think Kyle's throwing Brock under the bus. I think that's kind of overdone. I don't think that Kyle has some sort of text thread with Cal Comey saying, you know, make sure you say it's Brock's fault. I think Kyle does have an accountability issue because, you know, if you look at his special teams coach, right, how do you hold your players accountable when you won't hold your staff accountable? And, like, his special teams coach, I mean, they've had some bad special teams coaches through the, you know, last 45 years, but I'm pretty sure this is the worst I've ever seen with the Niners. And you have, I mean, quite frankly, an offensive line coach that's not doing a great job. And so, yeah, you're right. It's never Kyle's fault. That's sort of a general theme. And I feel like, you know, he's got to eat it a little bit this year because he's a lot of what's going wrong are sort of at the hands of his own decisions.
I don't know what you do with the special teams, Bonte, because the Hunt scores the touchdown. You throw to Kittle in the flat. You get tipped on the line. Then you have the big Ayuk drop, which everyone's losing their minds because Ayuk drops the ball. You pump the ball back to him, and Hardman has a huge return. And it's just like all the momentum gets swung over to their side. After you kept your base defense out early in the game and stopped them on fourth down, and we were all like, wow, I can't believe they snuffed that out. They knew it was coming. And it's just like every single – and I look, the missed extra point. I'm not as like crazy. It's your third kicker. Like
I would like to go for two. I would like to go for two.
Okay, I'll listen to that.
That's me.
I'll listen to that. But the kick return stuff, I don't even know. Like, just the special teams has been a nightmare this year. There's you can't argue that.
Right. It's
been a nightmare.
It has been a nightmare. And behind the scenes, you know, BPA says, does Kyle hold his coaches accountable? Well, you read reports, and from what you hear, Shanahan holds his coaches to the highest standard. And he's hard to deal with. Kyle Shanahan is hard. When he's game planning and he's getting ready for a team, he's on his coaches. He's on these guys. So special teams has been a letdown, and I'm sure Shanahan will evaluate the situation. Hell, Steve Wilks last year. A lot of people didn't like Steve Wilks. He ran a cover zero blitz in Minnesota, and nobody gave him a chance after that. And Shanahan moved off from him. It was like, look, it wasn't the greatest fit. So if Snyder doesn't get his act right with the special teams unit, and special teams doesn't get going here, well, Snyder's not going to be here long.
I can honestly say I'm sort of built for this.
You know, so that's where we're at with that. Let's go to Dave in Fresno. Dave, what's happening?
Hey, man, I've been chomping at the bit since you flushed my boy TC yesterday, man. I wasn't feeling that. Let me bring some context.
TC was talking about firing Shanahan, man. I just think that's ridiculous to talk about right now. That's just crazy talk, man. That's what five-year-olds talk about right now. Fire the coach, fire the coach. Blah, 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 blah. I'm not here for that. Let's have grown man conversations, please.
Okay, if you want to have a grown man, let the man speak. So listen, what I'm saying is it's not – I think the frustration is it's not firing Shanahan because it's a bad year. I think some of us don't have the faith that he can reinvent himself. And I think that's what he needs to do. But I think being here 8 years, I think the data shows that he's been unwilling to adapt and evolve. And the all talk I hear all week is, well, we need to evolve the offense and this and that. Well, I think what he needs to do is lose this system talk. And he needs to be like, everybody think he Andy Reid. Andy Reid said, forget this system. I'm going to do what it takes to win. I think Kyle,
honestly, I've been very critical of Kyle Shanahan in the past. Did he not adjust the system in 2021 when he realized that Jimmy was incapable of throwing an accurate football? And they said, you know what, D-Ball, you're going to play running back. Wasn't that not an adjustment to move your best wide receiver at the time to running back and give him carries and give him jet sweeps? Didn't he adjust that year to get them to the NFC Championship game?
Let me make my point.
You just said it. I just asked you a question. You said he doesn't adjust, and I'm giving you an example of when he adjusted. I could give you another example if you want, while you ponder what you're going to say next, Dave. Honest to God. Did he not adjust in 2022? Did he not adjust when he had three different quarterbacks? He adjusted from Trey Lance to Jimmy Garoppolo to Brock Purdy. Did he not adjust? Did he not adjust the system at times? He didn't?
No, he said no to Tom Brady. I know that. Because you know what? A real coach will put that ego aside and say, hey, I'm going to do what it takes to win. And right now, hold on. And right now.
That's all you got. You got nothing for me, Dave. You got nothing. You got nothing. You got nothing. He had to go to Tom Brady. He's a real coach.
He's been awesome.
These spoiled ass fans, for 1 second. There's a lot of spoiled apples out here. Four NFC Championship games in the last 5 years and two Super Bowl appearances. Trust me, I want to win the damn thing. And I was as depressed as anybody walking out of Las Vegas last year at Allegiant Stadium. That flight home sucked. Doing the show the next day sucked. Watching the confetti come down and the Chiefs celebrating, it stunk. But let's be real about something here, man. Shanahan did change. He did adjust. Trey Lance, well, we can't do some things with Trey Lance, so we're going to do this with Trey Lance. Did I agree with it? No. But he did adjust. No, he did adjust. So when you say he hasn't evolved or adjusted his system at what times, we've seen that in 2021, 2022, 2023, where he has adjusted. Okay? So let's stop with that. Let's be real here for a second. Let's stop talking about firing a coach who's helped you to great heights here. Like, let's stop. That's kiddie talk.
I think... Like when people say like they're out on Shanahan, I don't think they mean fire him today or whatever.
Listened to the show this week, Spadoni? Has he listened? These calls have been out of control this week, Jasky.
Well, I think there's a different. Well, okay, so you and I can have the conversation. Forget people that want to fire him, but like I do think there are a lot of people that are like, man, I wonder if this guy's ever going to be able to win the big one. I wonder if with this particular core, they'll be able to get over the hump. It feels like they had a window, they might have missed it. Now it might take a couple of years to get back. Like I think those are reasonable opinions coming out of that game. Like, man, this just might not be our year. And wow, we kind of got an old core that got old and expensive really fast. Now, it doesn't mean we're finished, but we might need a little jolt. You referenced some of the things they did in other years, and I was thinking about this, like, what's the magic bullet they have in their back pocket this time? Is there a trade? Is there a personnel upgrade? Can they just play better? Is it a guy getting healthy and coming back into the lineup? I don't know, man.
It may not just be their year. And so if it's not their year, okay, we sit back, we reevaluate. But do you really want to blow out the coaching staff because of 1 year after advancing to the Super Bowl and playing deep into the playoffs and for the last 5 years? All of a sudden, we want to just move on? No. We may need to reevaluate the situation and maybe not go to the playoffs. Maybe do this team good. We talk about the fresh start with the Golden State Warriors. We're going to have Anthony Slater on in 10 minutes, and we're going to squeeze some calls in here before we get to Slater. But the Warriors didn't make the playoffs, and they said to themselves, you know what? We got to reinvent ourselves. And now, they may not win a championship this season. Who knows if they make the playoffs? But it's at least a fresh look, and they're trying something different. And maybe that's what Shanahan and company need is, hey, we're going to take a step back here. We'll see what our quarterback does. We'll get some guys healthy. And then may be the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I just think the Warrior prism, so they won four. You know, like, 2022 was just incredible. And so, like, I hear you on the Warrior part. It's hard for Niner fans because you just haven't won the one. Had we won any of those NFC championships, they turn into a Super Bowl, just one, I think the whole paradigm is different.
No doubt.
And I think that not cashing it in, there's all these repercussions, and then there's the physical toll, and it sucks. It just sucks.
Let's go to Dave in San Francisco. Dave, what's happening? Hey, you're on the roast.
Hey, I think everybody's jumping the gun trying to fire Shanahan. Everybody got to remember, the coach that just beat us, Andy Reid, what he did with the Eagles for 10 years, three straight NFC championships, and they let him go. And look what he became after he got a franchise quarterback. Shanahan has done a lot more, but a lot less. So everybody got to say, man, that's all I got
to
say.
Absolutely. Let's go to Manny on Dilbarton Bridge. Manny, what's happening? You're on the roast.
Hey, good morning, fellas. The last caller just before me hit it on the head. I've been known to criticize Shanahan. I've been known to let people know that his play calling irks me sometimes. But I'm not going to sit here and say we're going to crucify Shanny, because you know what? His pedigree speaks for itself. His genealogy speaks for himself, and his background speaks for himself. In every one of his stops, he's shown that he's a proven commodity. And as the head coach of the 49ers, Niner fans, you're forgetting what we had before Shanahan. Need I remind you of the Chip Kelly and the Tom Sula eras, right? I mean, in comparison to what we have had, what we have now in Shanny, come on, 49er fans, let's be real about it. And just like the last caller said, if you can make Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard look somewhat respectable at certain times, speaks volumes about the kind of coaching you implement. And I'll tell you what, him talking to Purdy after the game, that's a great coach right there, because you know what? I never mentioned it, guys. I used to coach, and believe it or not, I coached special teams. And after the game, at the end of the game, I would talk to the players, even the quarterback. Our quarterback was never that great, but I would pull him aside and ask how his family is doing, how his dad is doing, how it sucks that your dad is interpersonal relationship with his players. I mean, guys, 49er fans, we have a coach that sooner or later the trophy is going to start coming in. You just have to wait it out. I know it's been a long, long winter at times. But you know what? We're almost there, Niner fans. Don't let one, two, or three losses this season discourage you. You take away a few key drops of the ball here and there, and we're looking pretty. I mean,
just as upset as that. Hey, Manny, good call. Ronnie Bell catches the ball at SoFi Stadium. You know, Jordan Mason holds on to the ball against Arizona. We're talking about a 5-2 football team.
And here I go. Ronnie Bell's not good. Well, I know. He should have caught the ball.
He's on the field.
But that's where, like, if it's Jacob Cowan, he might make the catch.
Well, who knows? Maybe Jacob Cowan may run the wrong route. We don't know. We don't know.
Possibly.
We don't know.
I do know this. Ronnie Bell,
he ran a great route, too, by the way. He ran an excellent route. Like, we don't even get credit for that. It was so amazing to see people. This is why people got to be patient. As soon as Brock Purdy threw the interception, get Ronnie Bell off the field. And I tweeted out, I said, do we know what Ronnie Bell was supposed to run? Brock Shanahan, that was on Brock.
Well, that was a devastating interception. Running the ball really well that drive. They were marching down, and it zapped everything.
It did.
That interception was so bad.
It was bad.
And where was it?
But it was
beyond the numbers.
Outside the numbers. And the ball sailed, and we were so quick to blame Ronnie Bell that we didn't even give ourselves time to say, hold on, what was the play design? What was the quarterback supposed to do? And right away we heard from Shanahan and company that it was on Brock Purdy. All right. Anthony Slater, 8:45. 8:45. We're going to squeeze in all these calls. Everybody on hold. A lot of people. Jose in Oakland. Think Shanahan has an accountability issue. Edgar in San Antonio has a theory on Shanahan. Zach in Redwood City. Yeah. Just said the bottom line, the performance on Sunday was unacceptable, which I agree with, on the offensive side of the football. We got a lot of calls. We're going to get to everybody before we get to Slater. We'll clear their deck here on the morning roast. And that's all coming up. Brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Shask, I know you need one because I need one too. And Valvoline Instant Oil Change is your 15-minute drive through oil chain. Visit the friendly expert technicians at local Valvoline Instant Oil Change to check fluids, tire pressure, windshield wipers, batteries, and much, much more. Locations and coupons at BayAreaOilChange.com.
Dub Nation is Buddy Hill. Listen to the Morning Roast with Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky on 95.7 The Game. You better hit those break, Bonte.
Buddy Buckets. Buddy Hill making his Warriors debut later tonight. We're going to talk to Slater in 12 minutes. 12 minutes, who's live in Portland for the season opener. Warriors and Blazers. Basketball's back in our lives. Mashasky, we're going to clear the deck here. We're going to clear the deck. We got Slater coming up in 13 minutes. Got a lot of people want to talk about Shanahan. Shanahan is a trigger point for a lot of people. Purdy, Shanahan. Shanahan, Purdy. Let's get to the lines. Get to the lines here, and let's start with Jose in Oakland. He thinks Shanahan, Shasky, has an accountability issue. Jose in Oakland, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. All right, let me start by saying something, okay? I may have an issue with the guy, but there's only two head coaches that I would choose to replace him if he ever left. Unfortunately, none of them would come to the Niners, and that would be Pete Carroll or Belichick, okay? So I'm not saying fire the head coach. That would be stupid. Okay, considering what we had before. But he does have an accountability issue. I mean, he has a history of throwing players or his assistant head coaches under the bus. I mean, this thing about him talking to Purdy for 5 minutes is not a big deal, really, when you think about it. I mean, the Tuna used to berate his players and head coaches on the sidelines. Bill Belichick used to berate Tom Brady. And you had Holmgren, you know, grabbing players by the neck. So, you have had all the head coaches that have, you know, done worse things. I think what makes the difference is that you really don't see Kyle do this too often. But there is a big difference. Those head coaches that I just mentioned, most of the time at some point they will say, you know what, it's on me. The buck starts with me. It's my fault that these guys weren't ready to play. It's my fault the game plan didn't work out. Kyle, I don't recall not even one time him saying that. It's always somebody else's fault.
Well, Jose, he did say Sunday, he went to the podium and said, we just got our asses kicked. We got beat up. We got beat. What else do you want him to say? Say, hey, my play call stunk on 1st and 10. Play call stunk on 3rd and 1. Shasky, what else do you want him to say?
I mean, at one point, you know, when they got stuffed on whatever it was, 3rd and 1 with the clock ticking and no timeouts, yeah. If your head didn't go, oh, my God, you're running out a third string kicker here. Like the second down call, I hate it. It ended up being like a throwaway by Purdy. It should have been a throw from that. You were literally 1 for 6 on 3rd down going into that play up until that point, and you had got stuffed on a prior possession on 2nd and 3rd and 1.
Yep.
So what made you think you were going to be able to run it in on 3rd and 1 with no timeouts, the clock ticking, and a backup kicker? Now, they got it done. It was a chip shot, but like, if your heart...
It should have been a touchdown.
At least throw the ball into the end zone.
Right, yeah, no doubt. And Jordan Mason got stuffed, and Kansas City's been stuffing running backs. You look at their history this season. I mean, Derrick Henry ran for 46 yards. Bijan Robinson ran for 31. J.K. Dobbins ran for 32. Alvin Kamara ran for 26. At one point, Jordan Mason had 7 carries for 6 yards. You know what I'm saying? You take away those big runs, and he had like 13 carries for 32 yards. So the run game was not working. It was getting stuffed. And that sequence there, it wasn't a good sequence. No doubt about it.
Well, the other part of this is that I actually thought Shanahan did dial up 2 huge chunk runs. They got called back for holds.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, like that's not on Shanahan. That's on Jake Brendel, I believe, was one. And maybe it was Trent Williams for the other one. I can't remember. But it's like, who's that on? You know what I mean? Like, and if guys with blocks like Saubert and Banks, is that on Shanahan?
Yeah.
Like, again, I'm not saying the sky's falling. The coach has got to go there. But, like, it's one of those losses. It's like I'm questioning everything because they broke me. Like this one team that has my number broke me.
Well, you know what? You may see that team again at some point. You never know. Yeah, never know. You got the Cowboys this week. Get to 4-4. Let's go to the lines. Get everybody on the board here. Let's go to Samita in Los Gatos. Samita, what's happening?
Hi, Samita.
Hey, guys. My thought is I watched that whole game, unfortunately, on Sunday. I was up in Oakland watching the game with a bunch of Niners fans, and my impression was this year's 49ers are last year's Warriors. Coming off a champion, you know, coming up off of going all the way, Warriors won it, but we didn't. But we had a great season last season. There's a letdown happening, and what we're seeing is, you know, this team is good, but not great. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing. And of course, there was drama, right? All the preseason stuff, you know, that plays into it because, you know, preparation is the name of the game. And when your offense is distracted because of all these other things that are going on in the offseason, I think that affects the locker room. It affects the cohesiveness and the team spirit. I think that's what happened last year with the Warriors. You know, we didn't know about it at the time, but it came out later. Clay was really unhappy. You know, there were a lot of undercurrents going on in the team. I think it affected the performance, and I think that's exactly what's happening with the Niners on top of everything else that everybody talked about. But I think it's the exact same thing. It's last year's Warriors.
All right, that's fair. Let's go to
an interesting comp,
and we'll dive deeper into that.
But to that point, like, and she said it, like, but they didn't accomplish the ultimate goal. And
that's the
part that's like the stinging part of it. Like, I'll take a couple down Warrior years. They gave me 4 titles.
You know,
it's hard to sit here and complain about the Warriors. Sorry.
Yeah, no. And to the point when I was walking out of Levi's on Sunday, I said, boy, the gap is wide between the Chiefs and the Niners. From that point in the Super Bowl in Las Vegas to what we saw on Sunday.
Were there Rockets,
Right now, the gap has widened a little bit. But you know what? There's time to fix everything. Let's go to Edgar in San Antonio. Edgar, what's happening? You're on the roast.
Hey.
All right, Edgar's not ready. Let's go to Noah in San Jose, and then we'll get to Zach in Redwood City. Noah, what's happening?
All right, what's up, guys? Hey, I just want to talk about all the ungrateful Niners fans. Okay, as someone who grew up and started to watch football in, like, 2015 to 2016 time, the Niners went 2-14 and 3-13. And I had all these classmates that were bandwagon Broncos fans, Panthers fans, and my team sucked. Okay, and we get Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo, and then we're suddenly contenders, and we're still contenders till now. So it's been, what, like 5 years of being
contenders. How old are you, young man?
Just turned 18.
God, to be young. Let me tell you something. Let me just let you know something. This fan base, when it comes to coaches, coordinators, and coaches, and quarterbacks, is absolutely insane. And this predates you becoming a Niner fan in 2015. This is going back to the John Brody days when he had to flip off the crowd that booed him. You can look him up. But let me tell you, this is nothing new to Niner fans, young man.
No, it's nothing new at all. I mean, we're going right through it, but We gotta have some perspective here. We gotta be adults at the table for once. We're not gonna just flip a coach off and say, you know what, bye bye, because you're struggling a little bit. You look at these games that they lost. Minnesota, I give it to Minnesota. They handed it to the Niners.
Minnesota looks
they
like did. A great team.
They've handed it to the 49ers. But when you look back at Sunday, I'm like, damn, the Niners are right there. Should have won it. You know, okay, fine. You lose to the Chiefs, whatever. But you blew the Cardinals and Rams game, and you're right there to flip it. So all it takes is a little spark here. Maybe that spark is Jacob Cowing. Maybe that spark is Ricky Pearsall. Maybe that spark is Deebo Samuel coming back, and he can rediscover his talents here without Brandon Ayuk on the field. We'll see about this. We'll see about it.
I would say that second half adjustments have been very poor, and I think that the second half performance from the players has been very poor. Even in the New England game, which you had, like looking back on it, you know, they kind of took their foot off the gas a little. They allowed them back into the game. Like, I think this isn't just coaching. To me, it's everything. So, totality. And here's the part that's hard. It's just, I mean, you're going to be without Brandon Ayuk for maybe a year and a half. I mean, the poor guy may not ever be the same. It's so sucky what ended up happening to him.
Well, let's see. Let's see what his timetable is. I don't want to jump to conclusions here, but if you get him right by next season, even if he misses the first month of the season, cool.
It's just a big loss, though.
It's a massive loss.
It's just a huge loss.
It's a massive loss for this football team. There's no doubt. Let's go to Zach in Redwood City.
I feel so bad for him as a player. Like, he might not.
Zach in Redwood City, what's happening? You're on the roast.
Hey, what's good? What's good, guys? Hey, I want to ask y'all a question because I envision a scenario, and I know the media has kind of brought it up a bit about Andy Reid and Philly type situation with Kyle Shanahan. So that's my question, but I'm ready to rant. I think things went wrong. We should have let Brandon Ayuk walk. You know, we lost that Super Bowl, right? But then his girlfriend was like, I don't know. I don't even know. We should have just let him walk. And, you know, you pay $30 million for a guy, and did he deserve it? Yeah, maybe, but at the same time, he couldn't have done the Niners worse what happened in the offseason. He wasn't with the team, right? And he ran a wrong route. Let's not forget, he ran a wrong route.
We're not going to do that. Come on. Let's not do that. This is a guy's career. Come on. But I will say this. Like, did I love the contract? I wanted him on the team, but I didn't love spending love spending $30 million on a wide receiver. But as much as we're frustrated with Ayuk and the Niners could have got the deal done for $5-7 million cheaper had they come to the table 6 months prior.
Right.
Like, I think if they were a little more proactive, like, it takes two to tango.
No doubt.
So and I'm not going to criticize he ran the wrong. Come on. Like, it's football.
He got hurt, he ran the wrong route? On the play he got hurt, he ran the wrong route on the catch? Is that what Zach was saying?
Well, JTL Sullivan did a breakdown about how, you know, if he runs more of a flatter, more in, which is like...
You know what?
But this is why I'm not doing that. I'm just saying.
JTL Sullivan, man. Good Lord. Oh, man. Edgar to San Antonio. Anthony Slater, 2 minutes. Anthony Slater, 2 minutes. Talk some Warriors.
We shouldn't do that.
Edgar in San Antonio.
It's so
who the hell is JTL Sullivan to sit there? Does he know the route? JTL Sullivan to speak up on what's going on with Shanahan? JTL Sullivan, when we call them just turnovers. Like, stop, JT. Just stop. I'm tired of hearing from these content creators about what route should have been ran and who he should have thrown to. How the hell do they know? Are they in the meeting room with the game plan? Are they sitting there in Shanahan's whiteboard saying, okay, we're going to do this against Kansas? They have no clue what the route was. No clue. Did JT Snow didn't even have a clue of his own wide receivers and what route station it ran when he played the damn game. So the hell is JT O'Sullivan? He couldn't even throw the ball to the right. Hey, JT, throw it here. Well, no, I'm going to throw it to the other team instead. Edgar, San Antonio, what's happening? Just turnovers, my ass. Edgar, San Antonio, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, fellas? It sounds like we all need a little bit of counseling today.
Nah, I'm fine. Warriors basketball is back. I'm good to go. It's all these people talking like they know what's going on the football field. Stop, please.
Well, I want to be the first one to acknowledge I am not smarter than Shanahan when it comes down to football. But I think I do have a little bit of a theory, just a little bit, and just want to get your guys' thoughts on it. You know, Shanahan has such a large tree in terms of his offensive mind. So I'm wondering, do you guys think that maybe possibly the league is starting to catch up to his scheme?
That's it?
Here's what I would say. Has the league caught up to Shanahan? I don't think the quote-unquote league is caught up to Shanahan. I do believe there are so many different Shanahan-like guys right out there that run similar concepts that I do believe that the whole league is now littered with a lot of people doing similar concepts to what he's doing. And so you now have a lot of defenses that week after week after week are accustomed to preparing for certain things that a Shanahan offense does. Like, look around the league. Like, B, how many teams are running comparable stuff to what Shanahan are trying to run comparable?
No doubt. It's a copycat league.
Right.
So defenses are adjusting. And you know what defenses are finding out? Let's just blitz the hell out of this game and maybe we'll get home. And right now they're having success playing man defense, cover one, sticky man coverage, as Baldy loves to say, and they're blitzing the hell out of these teams.
Kind?
You know, sticky man
coverage.
Is there
any other kind
of man
coverage?
There's man coverage in there. Sticky man coverage.
I want you to use that when discussing Jonathan Kuminga and Andrew Wiggins on opening night. Look at the sticky man coverage here, Chris Mullin.
Oh, you know what? I will. You know what? That's a great idea,
and you better reference me.
No, I will not reference you. That's a great part about this. Sticky man. Well, you know, the snitches out there on Twitter, they'll make sure to credit you because they always love to make sure that I don't get all the shine. So, sticky man defense, individual defense, sticky. This is sticky man defense, Fezzy.
Look at him. Look at him slide his feet. Look at the lateral quickness. Sticky man.
All right, let's get Anthony Slater on.
Look at the flipping of the hips.
Anthony Slater's got sticky hair. You see the grease he puts in the hair, man? Boy, he's shining.
Nobody uses TV. Grease. It's like mousse or gel. I don't know. What does he use?
He's got gel. Anyway, Anthony Slater.
Hairspray?
Live in Portland, courtesy of the River Islands Guest Line. All guests on 85.7 The Game appear on the River Islands Guest Line. Is it time for you to discover the islands? Our great friends, River Islands and Lathrop, we got to go back out there. I need to dip in one of those pools out there in Lathrop right now with the way Niner fans are talking. Slater, what's happening, buddy?
It's conditioner, by the way.
Conditioner. Oh, leave-in conditioner?
Well, yeah, yep.
I may need some of that, man. I got the curls going on. I need some leave-in stuff myself. Man, you got the good hair. Slates, man, what's up? New season. I mean, I know, obviously, you were in Hawaii, and I heard you were staying at a very, very nice hotel in Hawaii. So, out there at training camp. So, basketball season's been going on for you for about a month, but the official start of the regular season, man, I know you got some excitement, right? What year is this for you, covering the beat?
12.
You're 12.
Nine Warriors, but 12 if you include my three Thunder years, which I do. I don't know if y'all
No, I mean, I think it's one of the greatest free agent signings in Bay Area sports history. Getting Anthony Slater to come from Oklahoma City to the Bay Area, it's a great, great addition for the Bay.
I appreciate that. How's the season going? I'm staring at like 45-degree foggy Portland as we're talking, so it's not quite as nice as Hawaii. You know what I wish on a day like today? I wish the NBA opened like baseball opens. Like, we should have a little like Cavs magic at 11 a.m. We should have, you know, a Pistons game at 2 p.m., something like that. There should be some daytime basketball.
Which is why the league should start on Christmas Day. I mean, but that's a whole other conversation. We don't need to discuss it this moment.
I do like daytime basketball.
Let's start with the headliner, because we never ask enough questions about this guy. How many more prime seasons do you think Steph Curry has today? Because what he did for Team USA, it might be one of the, you know, the great final acts, but I feel like he's got more for the Warriors, but for the national stage, like how many more years does he have of that player?
We'll see. You know, if you had asked this question 4 years ago about LeBron, I might have been like, this is the last one. But, I mean, LeBron enters this season still considered a top 15-ish player, an all-NBA type guy. I'm pretty confident Steph Curry's an all-NBA player again this year. You know, is that second team, third team, first team? That remains to be seen. But I think he's got at least a couple more seasons of that, maybe three. I mean, obviously, he just added an extra year. The Warriors kind of needed to be three more years because they're going to be paying him $60-plus million 3 seasons from now. But, you know, just considering his conditioning, how serious he takes the job, and then his prime skill, which is obviously shooting, I think he's still got a long runway of at least, like I said, like all NBA level basketball. But I will also say there's a big difference between third team all NBA Steph Curry and first team all NBA Steph Curry, right? Like, is he in the MVP conversation this year, or is he just like a very solid top player on a team? Like, that might be the difference between 44 wins and 53 wins.
Have you seen any slippage of Steph Curry? Just a little tick. Any off-the-ball movement stuff you noticed? Anything about off the dribble, maybe beating his man off the... Because he's seeing now Steph Curry every night. He's going to see a 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", guy, long and athletic, and he's going to have to navigate through that. Has there been any signs? Because I don't think I've seen any signs yet, but maybe you have a better eye than me when it comes to this stuff. Have you seen any signs of slippage from Stephen Curry?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's slower than he used to be. Like, go watch those, like, unanimous MVP 2016, like, 2017 type seasons. Like, mm-hmm. he's so fast, shifty, you know, getting up the court. There's a little bit more burst in a sense, but that he's kind of made up for that with, like, strength and, mm-hmm. You know, kind of smarts and some of his little tricks off the ball he's mastered. I mean, he's kind of mastered the sport in a lot of ways, or at least his style of it, which is kind of why they have to make unique rosters that fit how he has to play. But the big thing is, I mean, you even saw in the Olympics, like, he's susceptible to, like, cold stretches, right? Like, mm-hmm. he was cold for the first six games of the Olympics, whatever it was. He needs to not have as big a burden this season as he did last season. But, I mean, as I'm sure you guys are about to talk about, like, the roster still kind of lends itself to believe he's going to have a pretty big offensive burden.
All right, so here's an interesting question. Not that Draymond isn't important, but given how you need others to step up and break through, if Draymond ends up being the second best player on the Warriors this year, is that a good thing or a bad thing for the overall team?
I think it's a good thing in the sense of obviously, like, kind of depends on what type of argument you're making. But if your argument is just like, look how good he still is defensively, hey, they have the second ranked defense in the league like they did during that 2022 title season. Like, Draymond was at the heart of that. He was, a lot of people voted him defensive player of the year that year. I think he finished top three. If he is still that, if you can still make the argument, hey, he's the second best Warrior because look at how ferocious he is on the defensive end and look how he ties everything together and they are winning because they're a top five defense, which, by the way, that's how they say they have to win this season, is being at least a top 10 defense, mm-hmm. then you can make the argument he's the second best player. Now, I think the point you're making is, like, somebody's got to emerge, and we're really probably talking about Jonathan Kuminga here, is like a second best scorer, like, if they had a second all-star this year, it's somebody a little bit more out of nowhere who's at least statistically, you could make the argument, hey, look, Kuminga's 21 per game on, you know, a pretty good volume at pretty good efficiency. That's fine. But I could still see them having a good season and Draymond being considered the second best player because the defensive end of the floor matters and they need him to be, like, you know, look like a defensive player of the year candidate.
Anthony Slater here on the River Islands guest line on the Morning Rush on 95.7 Gage. Speaking of Draymond Green, because we've heard Steve Kerr mention he wants his team to let it fly from the three-point line. Wiggins taking 5, 6, 7 threes. Kuminga catch and shoot threes. And they got up a lot of threes in the preseason. There's no doubt about that. Where does Draymond Green factor into that equation? Because shots will present itself. And I always thought, man, if Draymond took 5 threes a game, made 2 to 3 of them a game, it may make the defense shift their game plan, or maybe not because you still have Stephen Curry, but where does Draymond Green fall along with the offensive philosophy here moving forward?
I don't think they're going to be rushing out to contest the Draymond 3, even if he hits a couple.
Yeah.
He shot it well last year. I don't know if you got the stats up. What did he finish last year?
I think 38%. It was like 38%. You know, I had that crazy stat. When he makes 2 threes, the Warriors win like 75, 78% of the time.
Yeah, I kind of like how he played offense last year.
Yeah.
I kind of like how he played last year when he was on the court, right?
Yeah.
That's a big question for him this year. But, like, to your point, like, he's going to get a couple up per game. You know, particularly, I feel like those first quarter ones, right? You know, it's a little bit game plan. Like, he's got to show them, hey, I'll take it. kind of like what you're mentioning. Like, and he seems confident right now to at least get him up. And if he's in the mid-30s, which, like, you know, he was last year, that's enough. But, like, the volume's coming elsewhere. The volume's Kuminga. The volume's Buddy Hield coming off the bench, who I thought shot it really well in the preseason. The Pajemski, Wiggins, obviously Steph's going to get him up. Like, the volume is elsewhere on this roster. But, sure, Draymond's going to take a couple. Draymond has to be confident offensively. I mean, obviously, this is a conversation we've been having for, five seasons now. Yeah. But I feel decent about him entering the season offensively and defensively. It's just, again, stay on the floor.
Shasky, 39.5% from three last year for Draymond Green. 39.5%.
I like the top of the key ones, not the corner of the three. So I'm hoping he can move out from the corner. I don't think that's his best shot. If he can improve the corner, I would love that. I think that would make him more deadly. But getting back to Jonathan Kuminga, Anthony, there's so many elements to the Kuminga season. Obviously, how important he is. What position is he? How much does he value himself financially? How the Warriors haven't given him the deal that they did in years past to like a Jordan Poole. And then I'm looking at like teams with projected cap space moving forward. Like Charlotte has $47 million in projected cap space, but only, you know, four other teams in the league, and they're all bottom feeders that aren't good. And they only have about $25 million each, give or take. Break down this whole Kuminga finance situation right now, because I know that he wants to make a certain amount. The Warriors can pay him probably, you know, match anything that's out there. Like, how does this shake down this year with Jonathan Kuminga financially and for the Warriors? Can they get the best out of him?
So, I mean, he's got a lot of incentive, obviously financial incentive, to have a good season. Because what he has is that he has flashed some real skill and upside. He has a belief, and I think has shown enough that you can see, hey, look, this guy could become a pretty high-scoring 6'8" wing that would be highly valued in the league, but he does not have the track record of, for example, Franz Wagner, the guy picked one behind him, Scotty Barnes, who got the max contract, Cade Cunningham, who got the max contract. He wants to get to that level. Those are all his peers in his draft class, which if you go back to pre-draft, like, that was the ballpark he was considered in, right? I mean, he was being talked about as a top three pick. So to get paid at that level, he's going to have a really big season. And particularly a scoring season. And, you know, the Warriors do need that. And I think they're clearing the way in a lot of ways for him to have that. He's going to start tonight from what I've heard. And I think he's going to, you know, be given the runway. Like, they're obviously going to let him take a lot of threes. I think he's going to take a decent amount of mid-rangers, maybe more than everybody's going to like, but I think he's going to. And then if they get him out there in the proper lineups with the right spacing, he should dunk plenty. He set a franchise record in dunks last year. So I think the stats are going to be good as far as, you know, what that translates into next year in restricted free agency, or even at the deadline. Because he didn't sign an extension, he remains very tradable in a sense, come February, because he's, you know, on an expiring, you know, $7 million deal that's very easy to match. If there's a team out there that wants to commit to him as a major piece long-term, I think Brooklyn is a team I would kind of highlight as they're kind of clearing the decks. They're in the really early stages of a rebuild. He, you know, spent some of his life in that area. I think that's a franchise that could be a suitor for him potentially. So we'll see. He's just got to have a big year. And the Warriors need him to have a big year, and he needs to have a big year.
No, Don Anthony Slater here on the River Islands Guest Line live from Portland on 95.7 The Game Insider. And, of course, The Athletic's best beat writer out there covered the Golden State Warriors. And he had a story the other day about Mike Dunleavy and what he's done as a GM so far as he enters his second season as a general manager at the Golden State Warriors. And it was about the trades that didn't go down. Obviously, they were big game hunting, big name hunting with Lowry marketed and, of course, Paul George. But it didn't go down. And that was their plan A and plan B to try to get both of those guys. But I think Dunleavy so far, it seems like, from what I read, Slater, that does have the respect from not only the core players, but ownership as well, to kind of do what he does and build the roster to his liking here. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, Bonte, you're around. Like, you know, there's not many people who have anything, you know, bad to say about Mike Dunleavy. I think generally the feeling in that building is he's sharp. He will make the decisions that need to be made, including, like, you know, kind of like the Klay Thompson departure this summer. You know, they kind of navigated that tricky landscape, and like you're not hearing like grumbling from Steph or Draymond about how that went down. I think the biggest thing, and one of the things I really tried to convey in that story, which you mentioned, is despite maybe some angst fan base wise, there isn't from the stars. Steph Curry is not, you know, upset about how this summer went down and what was or wasn't done. He was very much in on the conversations. He's communicative with Mike Dunleavy. There's some frustration that the Paul George thing didn't go down as they voiced in that, and but it's more frustration aimed at the Clippers than, you know, upstairs in their own franchise. And because the George thing didn't go down, they didn't feel it was worth it to send everything for Lauri Markkanen, because they just didn't feel like that would be a title contender, and you're not going all in for a non-title contender. It was, you know, that's their calculus, whether you agree with it or not. They like the pivot. I mean, this team, particularly the stars, they really like De'Anthony Melton and how the team looks. And then there's a belief and an understanding from Steph Curry that, like, you know, if something presents itself, come deadline, come next offseason, he'll be in the loop on it, and they'll pull the trigger if they feel like, you know, it's worth it. And as far as Dunleavy goes, like Steph is of the belief that he will get something like that done if it's available.
Second year leap, Trayce Jackson-Davis, Brandon Pajemski. These guys had really great, I mean, just like legitimately great rookie seasons from both guys. What is the next step for those guys? Like, how do they really put their mark on winning with this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think Pajemski, like, that's what he does is help win, right? I mean, that's what he was last year, the plus-minus king, the leading charge taker, the, you know, like, the rebounder. He was, like, I think he led the team in total rebounds. Like, the question for him next up is as a scorer, you know, like, what does he shoot from three from a volume perspective this year and from a percentage perspective? Can he, at various times, particularly with Steph off the floor, like, can he go get you a bucket, or is it, you know, is his size and inability to finish in traffic, like, is that still just too much of a problem for him to take that kind of next tier leap? Is he just a high-end role player? Can he become more than that? I think we'll start to get those answers this season. But to your point, like, this is why Steve Kerr loves him, but, like, he already impacts when we know that. Like, yeah, the track record last season proved that. As far as Trayce Jackson-Davis goes, look, they need rim protection. They need a lob threat out of the center spot. He showed flashes of it last year. He's just got to scale it up more this year. They really are hammering him on run the floor. If he just, like, every time, like, they want to be a really fast team. They're telling him and Kuminga this, but I know when Trayce is on the floor, like, they remember what they used to want Wiseman to do. You can even say what JaVale McGee did for them. Remember when they played JaVale McGee for 4 minutes?
Yep.
And he had, you know, he would take a puff of his asthma inhaler right before he entered the game, and then he would just sprint up and down the floor for 4 minutes, and then they're like, all right, that's enough. That's kind of what they want out of Trayce Jackson-Davis. Just like go cause trouble with your speed and kind of bouncy athleticism and finishing for 5 minutes, and then got off the floor, and they'll go small. Maybe they'll play some Looney. He doesn't have to play a monster role. Maybe he starts at center. Maybe he doesn't. 20 minutes on some nights, 28 minutes on other nights. But, I mean, you mentioned it at the start of your question, and we were talking about Mike Dunleavy. Part of the belief in Mike Dunleavy and that front office is he's had one draft. I mean, at this point he's had two, but, I mean, Quentin Post, we'll see. But his first draft was Pajemski at 19 and Trayce Jackson-Davis in the 50s. Like, those were hits.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, he's already kind of proven himself in that sense.
You brought up Looney, and he's kind of the forgotten man, and, you know, some say maybe he was out of shape last season. Well, he's transformed his body, Anthony. He looks like a completely different dude. Where is he at right now in the pecking order? Obviously, he's going to play alongside Trayce Jackson-Davis. Wouldn't surprise me if he started a lot of games this season. But he's also playing for a contract, so another big season for Kevon Looney as well.
Yeah, he's like shooting a little mid-range with some confidence right now. It's still, when he pulls it up, you're like, is he really going to take that? but, yeah, I mean, he looks good. I mean, again, like, you know, the two or three guys that you would think should play tonight are not going to. And Looney might be one of those, you know.
Even against DeAndre Ayton?
Do you think they're fearing DeAndre Ayton? Like, that's how they have to restructure their rotation tonight to deal with DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, man, he's going to have 22 tonight.
Okay, watch. I think they're okay if Draymond's guarding DeAndre Ayton in crunch time, let me tell you. I mean, maybe, again, like, I could see Steve actually playing, like, 11 guys tonight. You know, right. Looney gets 8 minutes, right? You know, right. Maybe like a little 4 minute stint, just because, like, Steve still seems to be wrestling over the idea of, like, he has to not play somebody, not play a few guys. But I think Looney's old reliable. I do think he looks better. He obviously came into camp in better shape. He's going to take a few of those jumpers, and, like, he could have a decent season. But I also think if everybody's healthy, he's kind of on the back end of this really congested rotation.
Does Moody, is he guaranteed minutes despite signing a contract extension, 3 years, $39 million? Good deal for him. Good deal for the Golden State Warriors, team friendly. But
you will never hear me say he's guaranteed minutes.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. I'm asking because the fan base, you know, it's always that player with the fan base. Why is it this guy playing? And it feels like Moses Moody's that guy this year, and I like Moses Moody. But to me, when he signed a contract extension, everybody said, oh, yeah, they're going to play. I don't think he's guaranteed anything.
Before you answer that, Anthony, I just did the math a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, all right, look, so if there's 96 total minutes at the 2 and 3 spots, okay, and if you're going to play Wiggins and Kuminga at two of those spots for, let's say, 30 minutes a pop, right, that leaves you about 36 to 40 minutes for Buddy Hield, Moses Moody, DeAndre Melton, GP2, maybe Pods, maybe Lindy Waters. Like, it is a numbers crunch. Someone's going to get left out every night.
Lindy Waters has eked himself into this conversation, Shasky. I like it.
Oklahoma. Am I wrong?
Well, Steve Kerr said yesterday that Gee Santos and Lindy Waters are not going to be part of the rotation.
Well, he's not, but I actually do like Lindy Waters.
I like
him too.
That's another conversation for another day. Yeah, I mean, you're like, I think you can open up that positionally to the four. I mean, a lot of those guys are going to mix in at the four. Kuminga's going to play plenty of four. Wiggins will play some four. I can see Moody in certain lineups, like, theoretically being like a stretch four. They got to play Draymond at center more than they probably want to, and certainly more than Draymond wants to. But that's just how this team, you know, the lineups make sense. I think Moody's going to get a crack because I think he's earned it. Because, look, if Steve Kerr goes into camp saying, this is the competition, it's open, and then Moses Moody is one of their top five players in the preseason, and they were raving about him during practices in Hawaii, like, don't you have, like, if it was a competition and he theoretically kind of won the competition, in a sense, he's got to get a shot. But we all know Moses Moody's gotten 25 shots over various points over the last 3 years, and including, by the way, he always shows up in the playoffs. He always just randomly enters the rotation of the playoffs. And then Steve Kerr comes out post games like, look, I got to play him. He's got to be a rotation guy. And then he's out of the rotation 2 weeks later. So to answer your question, I do think he plays tonight. I do think he like sees the floor. I don't think he gets a DMP tonight, but that doesn't mean he won't 3 games from now. That doesn't like, I think there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching, and you know, the thing that will help this team, it'll hurt them, but it'll help them, is like, you know, there's going to be a sprained ankle here, a strained hamstring there. We'll probably clear the way for some guys.
Oh boy, Warrior season is back. The fandom's back. The calm before the storm. Warriors open up the season in Portland to take on the Portland Trail Blazers. Should be a lot of fun. Slater, you're always good to us, man. We look forward to reading your latest stuff.
See you, buddy.
And have fun up there in Portland and Salt Lake City, and then we'll see you Sunday at Chase Center.
Three worst teams in the West, I think, is who they get out of the gate. Portland, Utah, Clippers.
It's not bad. Can you go 3-0? 3-0?
Yeah, but if it's not, if it's 1-2 or something,
So if they start 3-0, we talk championship. If they start 1-2, we talk blow it up. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if the Pelicans might come in next week and go sweep on that 2-gamer. No. Y'all can get back to the Niner talk because I know it's straight panic mode.
So, hey, Slater, man, I was pulling for your guardians. I really was. We were texting, man. Juan Soto is just wonderful, man. That's it. That's all.
Like you said, maybe your Shane Bieber was there, but we'll talk next year.
Slater. Have a good one, buddy.
See you, pal.
All right. Anthony Slater here at the River Islands Guest Line as you are listening to 95.70 Game KGMC FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. You're telling me if they don't start 3-0.
No, it's not.
They don't blow people out.
15 games over 500.
Deep playoff run? We're talking deep playoff runs?
No. I'm not doing that this year. I made a promise to myself. You can, and it could be, because, you know, it could be Bonte Hill says, not Joe Shasky. Shasky is not going to lose his mind until we get to 15 games over 500. I might suspend my own rule if we get 10 games over 500. 10.
That's what we're saying out loud. Shasky and I. That we both believe this team can make a deep run in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
I'm not doing it.
You sure you're not going to do it?
So stop asking.
No, you will do it.